From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Here at Entrepreneur Magazine, I hear a lot of stories about how entrepreneurs founded their companies, and the stories tend to follow a pretty similar format. Okay, so someone has an idea, they take a bold risk to make it a reality, often sacrificing a fair amount of time, money, and relationships in the process. They become incredibly resourceful, they outsmart their competition, and now this is the really important one, at some point, they lie. Oh, don't act so shocked. I mean, not everyone, of course. Some people are all George Washington about it. I would never tell a lie. And I'm not talking about Theranos-level lies here where you're basically making up everything your company does. I'm talking about a lie. So many people have advanced their business, sometimes even saved their business, thanks to a lie of some kind. A lie that the company is bigger than it is, that they're more prepared than they are, that they know how to do something that they really don't. These people are faced with an opportunity, they lie to get it, and that's part of their story. And now here's a question. Is that okay? Should we reward that? Should we like that? And what's the line? And before you answer that question, let me put you into the mindset of one such entrepreneur who is told one such kind of lie.
My wife was actually pregnant with our firstborn, and with her big belly as we went out the door, and this is, you know, you can appreciate no sleep for months and no end to the stress, certainly no vacations. She said to me, this deal's done, right? You know, I've been watching these faxes come and go, and you've been parsing all the details. And I said, yeah, it's done. We're going up to get it signed.
This is Gary, and frankly, I've eaten a lot of his product.
I'm Gary Hirschberg, former CEO and co-founder and chief organic optimist at Stonyfield Yogurt.
What Gary is describing there with the stressed out wife and the deal that's almost signed, that's the first big turning point moment in Stonyfield's history. It's the moment that Stonyfield Farm almost ceased to exist. Back in the 1980s, when Stonyfield was still a young and mostly regional brand, a couple of deals had fallen through and the company was just hemorrhaging money and it was struggling to keep the doors open. And finally, before the company was just totally bankrupt, the founders had found a potential savior. It was a yogurt manufacturer in Vermont that wanted to work with them. And so Gary and his co-founder Samuel drove up to Vermont, met with the manufacturer, and it turns out that the deal would not save the company after all. So they turned around and got back in their car.
And we started driving. And of course, in northern New England in April, you never know what's going to happen. Well, in our case, a blizzard was happening. And we started driving. And now I had to go face my wife. One of us had to go make yogurt that night, and we had literally nowhere to go.
Now, let me ask you the question again. Is it okay for an entrepreneur to lie? Because this right here is the life of an entrepreneur. Stressed out spouse, company on the brink, driving through a blizzard. Is it okay to lie? A lie that'll save the company? That'll save lots of jobs? That's what this episode is about. I'm going to tell you the lie that saved Stonyfield and turned it into a national brand that ultimately sold to a French food conglomerate for an undisclosed amount in 2001, and then to another food conglomerate from France in 2007 for $875 million. No lie, we will reveal it all right after the break. Solving big problems is one of the most exciting things about being an entrepreneur, but that's hard to do when the small problems stack up. Zenefits all-in-one HR platform keeps you and your team focused on the big picture by handling your crucial HR and payroll tasks. Whether it's running payroll, routing PTO requests, or even managing performance, Zenefits does the heavy lifting so you can stay focused on running and growing your business. And right now, Zenefits is offering a special discount to Problem Solvers listeners. Reserve up to 30% off your Zenefits subscription when you sign up for a free demo today. Go to Zenefits.com/problem solvers to claim this special offer now before it's gone. That's Zenefits.com/problem solvers. But act fast. This special offer is only available through August. Zenefits, welcome to the People platform.
And now our second sponsor.
If you've ever sent an email to customers, then you know this is not as simple as like sending an email. It's not sending an email. You need the right email marketing platform, one that's actually designed with your type of organization in mind. That's what Emma is. It puts its customers first, offering powerful email marketing with a personal touch. With Emma, you'll have everything you need to connect your data, build your audience, and do your most successful marketing ever. And how do they do it? With their easy-to-use platform, which makes advanced functionality accessible to everyone on your team, no technical skills required. You can even connect Emma with the services you count on to run your business, like Salesforce and Google Analytics. Not to mention, Emma's award-winning team is always ready to support you on your email marketing strategy, design, list migration, and more. So, put the power of email experts behind your marketing. Request a customized demo of Emma's email marketing platform today at myemma.com. Again, that's myemma.com. All right, we're back. So first, let's see how Gary and his co-founder Samuel Kamen got into this yogurt mess in the first place. It starts back in 1979 when Samuel was running a nonprofit organic farming school and Gary was on the board. Then Reagan slashed funding for organic agriculture and renewable energy projects, which left the farm without a bunch of money it had relied upon. So the board members get together to figure out what to do, and someone starts talking about this yogurt that Samuel was making. And he had one cow, and he developed this recipe for delicious yogurt that he'd basically just been bringing to board meetings.
We said, why don't we sell this yogurt to replace the funds? And we went from one cow to seven cows. I joined him full time. We grew it to 19 cows.
This began in 1982, and it was really slow going at first. I mean, this was an era before organic food was popularized, and also, frankly, before yogurt was popular. All most people knew was that Stonyfield was way more expensive than the mass market yogurt that they were used to seeing on the shelves. So Gary and Samuel were constantly hustling, doing tastings at stores and figuring out every little guerrilla marketing trick they could think of, like this one time at Gary's birthday.
After I blew out the candles, give a speech, I said, listen, if you want to give me a really good present, go down to Bread and Circus and ask for our yogurt. That was a Sunday. On Wednesday, the buyer called and said, I don't know what's going on, but demand has gone through the roof. Get it in here.
And they also tried different flavors to get people's attention, though that didn't always go so well.
We did try some unique flavors, some that were not only ahead of their time, but their time still has not come. For example, our garden salad yogurt with freeze-dried herbs and vegetables. You know, most of the world eats yogurt as a savory item, not as sweet, but Americans aren't quite there yet.
Yeah, Gary, I'm not there on that one either. Anyway, slowly but surely, they built up demand. They'd been operating out of a little factory that they'd built on their farm, but they eventually outgrew it and moved to a contract facility in Western Massachusetts, which is to say that there was a manufacturer there that was getting paid to make their yogurt. And this enabled them to triple capacity, which was pretty exciting, until the night of October 14th, 1987, the Thursday night before Black Friday, when Gary got a call from that manufacturer's banker. And the banker had a question. Hey, Gary, do you want to buy the manufacturing facility? And Gary didn't have that kind of money. So, I mean, Stonyfield wasn't even turning a profit at that point.
And I said, no. And I said, why? And she said, well, we're not going to. They failed to meet their covenants in their third consecutive year of their SBA guaranteed loan. And my boss probably isn't going to renew their loan. So if you don't buy it, they're probably going to shut it down. I said, well, how much time do I have? And she said, I don't know. And that was a Thursday night. And a Friday at 7 a.m., we got the answer. They padlocked the place. They had $100,000 of my milk and fruit and yogurt finished product in there. And with a perishable product, you had to get the product out to the stores or you're going to lose that space. So we begged and borrowed, found $100,000 on top of our, at that point, modest but still weekly losses of a couple $1,000. And we brought everything back to the original Hilltop Farm that we had exceeded its capacity a good 9 months earlier. Now we had to go three shifts, 7 days a week, around the clock, in order to keep up with demand.
So now we have a problem. The yogurt company isn't making money, and it's now scrambling to keep up with the demand it had built up. That means it's making a lot of errors, leading to a lot of spoiled product and missed orders from retailers, and the company is starting to lose $25,000 a week. This is totally unsustainable. And so Gary goes into fundraising mode. Now, it's important to know that Gary has already raised a fair amount of money to get Stonyfield to where it was at the time, and that involved a lot of family and friends. His mother and mother-in-law had both chipped in money. By 1988, he had more than 100 shareholders, and he just had to keep borrowing. I mean, as they were trying to figure out a way to get this yogurt company back on track.
You have to picture, too, we were on this hilltop farm. My partner with his six kids had his apartment. My wife and I had our apartment. And then we had the offices and the yogurt works. And I would tiptoe over from my bedroom at night to the office to go borrow another $1,000 over the phone from my mother-in-law or my mother or somebody. And my mom would, and Meg, my wife, would pick up the phone. And I would hear the click-click of call waiting on my mother-in-law's phone with Meg calling her saying, "Mom, don't do this." You know, we got to a point where we were hemorrhaging so constantly and frequently, and my mother-in-law was replenishing with great regularity, as were others, that my wife and I made a pact, and my mother-in-law made a pact, that we just wouldn't tell Meg what we were doing anymore. She couldn't handle the stress. And so that meant, you know, Thanksgivings were board meetings, right? You know, you've got that much of your family at stake. But that's the reason also you don't walk away. I mean, this is the reason that venture capitalists want to see friends and family, F&F money in there, because, you know, they know that you might walk away from a suit, you know, a Stanford MBA, but you're not going to walk away from your mother-in-law.
He was not going to walk away from his mother-in-law. That is a man who knows better. So Gary and Samuel kept pushing, kept working nonstop, and kept trying to find a solution to save this business. And unfortunately, it was really hard to find another manufacturer to work with because Stonyfield yogurt isn't easy to make, and the company needed a facility that could handle a really large scale really fast. But finally, Gary found one that was interested, and they negotiated over a deal that would end the company's woes. And yeah, you know what's going to happen because this is the story that I started on at the beginning of this episode. Gary and Samuel drive up to Vermont, where the manufacturer is, and they look at the contract, and it's totally different from what they'd discussed.
They had decided to, that we were so desperate that they were going to just steal the company. They said, "We're going to allow you to convert your equity holding shareholders to debt holders, and you can pay off their debt at one penny per cup," which we estimated would be about 2 years. "And then at the end of the 2 years, we can sit down and negotiate your future employment." So it wasn't a deal, it was a steal.
And yes, Gary and Samuel were desperate, but they weren't about to give away the company. So they got back in the car and drove home. And, you know, this is the scene. This is the scene. Gary's wife is pregnant. The company is hemorrhaging money. They just seem to have lost their last shot at saving the thing. And Gary and Samuel are now just totally dejected. And they start talking about what they're going to do after the company closes down. But that felt too sad. Neither of them were ready for that. And so they started another conversation.
I said, Samuel, what do you think is the minimum it would cost to build a yogurt plant of our own? Just like, let's forget about depending on somebody else. People keep letting us down. And he said, "You know, I was thinking the same thing." And he flicked on the dome light in the car, and we started to design a yogurt plant, these two crazy guys. And anyhow, we calculated that for $592,500 with a leased plant, we could probably get ourselves on our feet.
Of course, they didn't have $592,500. And that kind of money wasn't going to be coming from Gary's mother-in-law anytime soon. So where is that money going to come from? The next day, Gary drives to the closest SBA office and offers them a deal.
I said to the SBA, "Listen, we've got a bank willing to, it's going to cost us $592,500 to build this facility. We will find a leased facility. We only need 21,000 square feet. At that point, New Hampshire was in a recession. There was going to be plenty of space. I said, "We have a bank willing to provide the loan as long as you'll provide the 85% SBA guarantee. And I have the shareholders that will put up the $100,000 that we need," because we knew we needed 1/6 of it.
No, don't worry. You didn't miss something in this story. Actually, when Gary was telling me this story, that's what I was worried. I was like, was I not listening at some time when you lined this up? No. Gary didn't have the bank. He didn't have the shareholders with that $100,000. He had nothing. But he was telling the SBA that he did have that because he wanted its 85% guarantee. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the lie. It's the lie that will save Stonyfield. "I have a bank and I have investors." Gary had neither. But the way Gary sees it, he could have gotten those things. It's not outside the realm of reality. It just hadn't happened yet. And also, it was kind of a chicken and egg thing. The SBA wouldn't have given him that guarantee without the bank and the investors, and he didn't think that he could get the bank and investors without the SBA, so something had to come first, and if he could lie to get the SBA in, he figured the rest would follow.
I believe that determination is the most undervalued and essential ingredient for success. More than a great product, more than financial acumen, more than, you know, great marketing, just absolute determination. And I would say as a second, as a corollary, believing in yourself when no one else does. And no one else did believe in us. But I can find that thread in every successful entrepreneur. I know Steve Jobs talked about this, Ben and Jerry's. There come, as you say, these moments where you've just... And so I wasn't thinking I was doing anything wrong. And besides, it's taxpayer money. It was my money. And I wanted to get a little bit of it. We needed it. So I went to the Bank of New England. They said, yes, this is a great 85% loan guarantee. This is what we do all the time. We'll start the paperwork. But I'm going to need proof that your shareholders have come up with the $100K. So I called. Most of the shareholders were in the Boston area. I called them. I said, we have an emergency meeting tomorrow night, Friday night, in Boston at my lawyer's office. Can I get you to come in? And, you know, this is pre-internet, no emails. This is we did have a few people on speakerphone. And I just, here was a case where I was just brutally honest. I said, look, very simple. I got the SBA, I got the bank, but without the $100K. And these are, of course, people who are funding all along anyways. There's no more company. And so I'm not holding a gun to your head. If you don't want to do it, then we respect that you're done. And I'll step out of the room and you guys can talk about it. And one of the shareholders got up and stormed out and said, the damn thing's bankrupt. You know, forget this, like chapter seven. But the rest sat and stayed. And they said, Gary, you don't have to leave. And, you know, I will tell you, I can feel it to this day, the sob that I was holding back because, you know, I was out there way out on a limb and they backed it. They each went around the room and came up with the $100K. And we went back up, got the paperwork done. And that was April of 1988. And we opened our facility in December of 88, and we began making money in January of 89.
And the rest is yogurt history. As Gary told me the story, I thought back on a recent experience I had had at the magazine. We had recently published a collection of six stories about founders who had bootstrapped their companies, and two of them involved some kind of lie. For example, one of them was about a Dublin-based company called Product to Market, and the co-founder and CEO, Andrew Byrne. In the company's early days, the Microsoft had wanted to hire it for a project, but first wanted to conduct a site visit to make sure Product to Market had the manpower to handle the contract. And truth be told, it didn't. It was a small startup. But Anthony decided to make sure that it looked the way that Microsoft needed it to. So he brought friends, family, and neighbors into the office to have them pose as employees and make the startup seem twice its size. And it worked. Microsoft became its first major client. So after that story ran, I got an email from a reader who was very upset. He wrote, quote, I don't think the magazine should be promoting people who got ahead by lying as an example for others to follow, end quote. And to be honest, I hadn't thought about it. It's just so common to hear an entrepreneur talk about some kind of bending of the truth, some way of gaining a false advantage, I guess, at the moment that they needed it. And I wondered, well, should we be endorsing this kind of thing? Maybe the reader was right. Were we wrong to run these stories? So when Gary told me about his lie and the way it saved Stonyfield, I told him about this whole incident and the story and the email, and I asked him what he thought.
I have to say that at that moment, you do whatever the heck you have to do to make it. Now, we weren't doing anything illegal or felonious. Our product was still excellent. We were still standing by all of our standards, but we were fighting for our employees' jobs and our mothers and mothers-in-law's and friends' investments, fighting for our lives. And I think anything goes as long as you're not injuring anybody. Look, it is lying. I will also not insult you, but I will say that there were elements of truth in every one of those promises. I did know that this Bank of New England guy wanted to bank us. And I also knew that the shareholders faced with Armageddon were going to come up with the $100K.
After my conversation with Gary, I called up another person, Tomas Chamorro Premzich. Sorry, Tomas, if I got that a little wrong. He's the CEO of Hogan Assessments and a professor of business psychology at the University College of London and Columbia University, because I'd seen something he'd written in the Harvard Business Review about entrepreneurs lying. And so I repeated basically all of this to him and said, "What do you think of these lies?" And in summary, he said,
"Is it very different from an individual going into an interview and claiming that he or she can do things that, you know, they can't, or that they have certain experience? Is it very different from somebody going to onto a first date and, you know, lying about their own habits or their own kind of attitudes, beliefs?"
To Tomas, the important questions are whether you can ultimately back up what you're lying about and whether anyone's hurt by your lie. Lying that causes personal harm is not okay. Lying that puts you in a position to do something you know you can do or that you at least feel really confident about. To that, he just shrugs. Who doesn't do some version of that, he says. If you don't, you'll just be passed by all the people who do. And Gary thinks similarly.
I mean, look, when you're sitting across the desk from a buyer and they are demanding things that you don't know if you're capable of doing, but you don't want to demonstrate any lack of confidence. Yeah, I mean, chutzpah, whatever you want to call it, is an essential ingredient for success. You have to be able to stare down the beast, look across the desk with a totally straight face and say, "Yeah, we can do this." I find that, certainly for myself, but most successful entrepreneurs I know, just we're emotionally or chemically different. We don't react in the moment. We don't flip out. You just holding steady is one of the critical behaviors that is necessary, because so much stuff is coming at you all the time, usually multiple things. And I'll also say quickly in my own defense here that at the same time that this was happening, I was engaged in radical honesty with my suppliers, because as you can imagine, I was stretching my payables pretty darn far. And the only way you can do that after a little while, because it gets old for them, is by being brutally honest, you know, keeping what I call the talk-do ratio low, you know, delivering on, making promises that you'll deliver on and delivering on all of them. You know, I find that creditors don't mind getting less than they're due that week, as long as they're getting something. You know, we did games. I mean, I'll give you one other example. We, at one point, I had to send a big check off to a large, to our largest supplier, which was our cup supplier. I knew the check was no good. I put it in an envelope. I brought it out to our parking lot, which is on the farm, basically a gravel, muddy mess. I stepped on the envelope a couple times, got it nice and muddy, put it in my drawer. A week later, when they finally called and said, "Gary, where's that check?" I said, "You wouldn't believe what happened." And I sent them, I said, it fell out of the mailbag. And I sent them the envelope with the dirt on it to prove the point. So now, you know.
At that point, had the check, was there enough money in the account?
A week later, there was money. Yeah, right. It had to clear.
Right.
I mean, we did all the payroll contests with the employees. Who can go the longest without cashing their check? You know, of course, the reward was all the yogurt you could eat, which they could have had anyways. I mean, look, you beg, borrow, you steal, you stretch, you do what's necessary. But I knew that that check would be good in a week. I knew it wouldn't be good then. It didn't serve me to tell him it wasn't good then. I just figured I'd find another week. And we all laughed about this, you know, years later. It's not like this is felonious behavior, and it's also not like they haven't seen it before. I think I would make this point too. I think lying, if we want to call it that, which I guess is what it should be called, for the common good, because in the end it didn't help the vendors for me to go under either, right, is okay as long as you ultimately do deliver. In other words, exaggerating, stretching, if there's an element of truth in it, then, you know, you're not, you know, completely amoral here. If there's no truth to it at all, that's, I think, a different matter.
It feels strange to sit here and endorse lying, right? I don't know. Felt like use that clip a little too many times this episode. I mean, you know, I hate lying. I hate when people do it to me, and I feel awful whenever I have to do it. Not that I've ever done it. But what I like about entrepreneurs, and particularly entrepreneurs on this subject, is how totally blunt and practical they can be. I mean, listen to Gary and Tomas. To them, lying is a tool. And like any tool, you shouldn't abuse it, and you should use it only when necessary, and you should be careful and sure that you know what you're doing. It's a nuanced prescription. And I'll be honest with you here, it's kind of convincing. And that's our episode. But wait, before you go, please hear me out on a few ways you can stay in touch with the show and contact me directly. First of all, if you like the show, it would be amazing if you subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We come out every Monday morning. Also, I love hearing from listeners. You can go to jasonfeifer.com. That's J-A-S-O-N, F as in Frank, E-I, F as in Frank, E-R.com, where you'll find my email address, social media handles, and also you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, The Feifer 5, which is 5 monthly insights and bursts of inspiration for entrepreneurs. It's basically a collection of the ideas that excited me the most that month. So please go check it out. And that's again, jasonfeifer.com. And if you want to drop me a line directly, please let me know about the problems you've solved, and I might have you read the letter in a future episode of the show. We can all learn from each other, and that also means you. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media, and this episode was edited by Conrad Martin. We are also online at entrepreneur.com. Again, I'm Jason Pfeiffer. Thanks for listening, and now go solve some problems.